G'day. Indy Wood is my name. You're listening to The Local Update, a podcast looking at local issues, events and personalities from around the Bega Valley. And today on The Local Update, we'll do something that we've done once before. I'm going to hand the whole episode over to local historian and font of knowledge, Graham Farram. This week, Graham looks at the history of the medical industry in the Bega Valley, featuring doctors including Dr. George, famous for the name of Dr. George Mountain, the Imlay brothers, and of course, Dr. Evershed. You're listening to The Local Update, a podcast looking at local issues, events and personalities from around the Bega Valley. Indymedia.com.au is the place to go if you've got any questions about each episode. There's a new episode of the podcast released every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. right there on indymedia.com.au. My name's Indy Wood and I'm your host every week. Who are you, love letter? My regular guest every week on The Local Update is Mr. Graham Farram. He's a long-term local from the Bega Valley, been a second-hand bookseller around the region, been involved with Bega's Regional Gallery, and for a long time now, been affiliated with the Bega Historical Society and the Pioneers Museum. Every week, he looks at the history of this region in one way or another, and this week, he's looking back on the history of doctors from around the region.
Hello, it's nice to be in the foyer of the Bega Pioneers Museum again, the old family hotel on the corner of Auckland and Bega Streets, once upon a time the centre of town. It looks like it again today. We're doing the social distancing and all of that still, which is very appropriate, of course. I've noticed that we have had the odd visitor through, so people are finding us again, which is wonderful. But like a lot of people, I guess, you know, I've been thinking about those essential services and, well, we've had all the trouble with the fires, so Fire and Rescue New South Wales, the RFS, hospitals, doctors, nurses, chemists. Goes on and on the list. I thought today I might have a bit of a look at early doctors here in Bega. The first two I'm going to mention were born here, and then I'm going to rage a bit further afield. The last biography given in Bailey's History of Bega is in a class of its own. Bega's distinguished daughter, Miss Dr. Dagmar Byrne, 1865 to 1915. A potted biography appears in the 1885 Bega 1985 centenary year. It's of incorporation of the municipality back then. This publication also includes early photographs and contemporary advertisements. Two local chemists purchased advertising space in 1985. The most recent Bega Valley Historical Society publication to mention Dr. Byrne is They Made This Valley Home, as told by Sandra Florence and Diane Pryor, 2002. Thanks to a trick of alphabet, Dagmar's biography appears first. In part it says, so much has been written about Dagmar Byrne and her fame as the first female medical officer in Australia, but each article has an error or two, so hopefully this is her real story. Dagmar was born in Bega in 1865 and is well known as the first woman medical student to study at Sydney University, or any Australian university. She began studying arts and transferred to medicine in 1885. Although her professor, Stewart, wrote, I have had a lady in my class for over 2 years, as gentle and modest a lady as I have ever seen. As such, she came to us, and as such, she has remained, taught alongside male students, and has dissected side by side with the men. The lady is now going round the wards of the hospital with the men. Dagmar experienced crippling discrimination from the lecturers and male students and decided, after 4 years at Sydney University, to travel to England to gain her medical qualifications. With her sister Florence, who had been teaching at her own Sydney school for several years, she was encouraged to travel to England, where she entered London's University Medical School and passed the exams easily. In 1889, Dagmar moved to the Royal Free Hospital, where she passed the Society of Apothecaries exams with no problems, showing that the Sydney Medical School had failed her deliberately. While she was overseas, her mother was widowed for a third time and lost the family fortune when the Sydney banks failed in the 1890s. This caused financial problems for Dagmar and Florence, as well as her brothers and sisters at home. Florence insisted on getting a job as a governess to enable Dagmar's continued study in England, and her graduation as a doctor in 1893, working in the North Eastern Fever Hospital at Tottenham near London. With a persistent cough and weight loss, Dagmar returned to Sydney on the 9th of January 1895, back to the sunshine she loved. As Dr. Dagmar Byrne, she presented her impressive qualifications to the registrar of the New South Wales Medical Board and opened a practice in Macquarie Street. She had been exposed to tuberculosis in England and was diagnosed with the disease in Sydney after concern about her racking cough. Dagmar moved her practice to the Parkes area of New South Wales for the drier air, hoping to find a cure. She died there at a friend's property at Trundle in August 1900, aged only 34. Dagmar's sister, Florence Frederica Byrne, born 1868 Bega, became principal of Springwood Ladies College in the Blue Mountains, west of Sydney, in 1899. She was educated at London University and for several years taught there. She married Frederick Gilder in 1906. Both of Dagmar's sisters named their daughters Dagmar in her memory. There's a credit here, many thanks to Vanessa Witten, who researched her Byrne cousins. Now, that book is available here in the museum. In a similar vein is Bailey's biography of Robert Henry Ritchie, MB, 1869 to 1903. As a boy, Dr. Ritchie attended Bega Public School and is said to have been Bega's cleverest son. He was a pupil at the school in W.H. Wilson's time and was a classmate of John Peden, who we might mention again. He considers him to have had an original mind and to have been a keen reader and thinker. He went on to Harris's High School, Sydney Grammar School and Sydney University. He studied medicine at Guy's Hospital, London, and after a brilliant career there, where he won many scholarships, he studied diseases of the ear in Germany. Ill health forced him to return to Australia, and after a holiday in Bega, he completed his studies in Melbourne. He took up a practice in Horsham, Victoria, but died at the early age of 34 on the brink of what had promised to be an outstanding career. The earliest reference to a doctor in Bailey is found in his biography of William Hope Balmain, J.P., 1883 to 1961. Now, that's Balmain Brothers, but we're not talking about him just right at the minute. It's a relative of his. Surgeon W. Balmain arrived in Australia with the First Fleet, but never married. He attended Governor Phillip when he was speared by the blacks at Manly and received grants of land at Balmain, 250 acres, Hawkesbury, 270 acres, and the Field of Mars, 1,000 acres. The first clearly identified doctor in the main text of Bailey turns up in the 1830s when we are told, squatterages were quickly being taken up throughout the district by Braidwood squatters. Kerlewis selected Narara, but Dr. Thomas Braidwood Wilson jumped his claim. Narara Creek is crossed going north at Cobargo. We hear no more of him in the history. Likewise, in the 1840s with Dr. Waddell. The only record of his work seems to be a simple epitaph in the old Corrigeri Cemetery. He died in January 1851. I wonder if his name should be associated with Doctor's Creek, just north of Bega between Cooper's Gully and the current Snowy Mountains Highway turnoff. Of course, the Imlay brothers, Doctors Alexander, George and Peter, were active here at the same time. Bailey's biography of the brother doctors says in part, the Imlay brothers, Peter, 1787 to 1881, George, 1795 to 1846, Alexander, 1801 to 1845. Peter George and Alexander Imlay were sons of a surgeon of Aberdeenshire, Scotland, and all three were apprenticed as surgeons in the Imperial service. Alexander was in the Army medical staff, and George and Peter in the Royal Navy. Alex arrived in the colony in 1829, and Peter in 1830 as surgeon at Sydney Infirmary. George arrived in 1833. Peter and Alex settled at Panbilla after setting up a whaling station on the shores of Twofold Bay. In 1832, Governor Burke gave his friends, the Imlay brothers, the pastoral district of the far south coast for a squattage, and after a time in the government residence, Oaklands, Panbilla, they made a homestead known as Tarraganda House at Corrigeri, Bigger, B-I-G-G-A. When ordered to other stations, the three doctors retired from the government service and devoted their whole attention to their pastoral, agricultural and whaling enterprises. They promoted peaceful relations between whites and Aborigines and freely gave their medical service to both. Finally, however, the brothers failed and Walkers, the bankers of Hobart Town, took over all their squatterages, which at that time totaled 960,000 acres, with the exception of Tarraganda. In 1845, Peter Imlay bought Tarraganda and Yarranung freehold. Meanwhile, in 1846, George had committed suicide on the mountain, now called Dr. George Mountain, and Alex died in 1847. Both brothers were buried at the foot of a high granite boulder, thus beginning the Tarraganda Cemetery. Soon after, Peter left the district for New Zealand, and so the Imlays passed from the Bega district. He settled at Taranaki, New Zealand, and in 1857 at Whanganui, where he died in 1881, having lived to the age of 94. He was said to have had a retiring disposition. It is recorded that he visited Bega in 1858. Another doctor who rates a biography in Bailey is John Shields, MD, 1837 to 1882. For 21 years, John Shields acted as a medical practitioner in the Bega district until death claimed him in 1882 at the early age of 45. He was buried in the old Bega cemetery. Dr. Shields was a licentiate of the Edinburgh College of Surgeons and arrived in Hobart in 1855, going to Twofold Bay at the time of the Kyandra Gold Rush, later moving to Panbilla and then to Bega, where he practised till his death. He was a medical officer when the MUIOOF Oddfellows Lodge started in Bega and was coroner for many years. The School of Arts owed much to his efforts. He was its president for many years and was a liberal donor of money, books and time. He was referred to as father of the institution, and in 1868 he headed the list with £20 for the erection of the building. Although a Presbyterian, he was always ready to help all. Everybody had a good word for him, and as one of the newspapers of his day wrote, in public esteem, he stood preeminent. Now, all these doctors who came from being ship surgeons, just as a bit of a, I think it might be instructive to have a look at a couple of newspaper articles retrieved from Trove. This is the Ship News from the Sydney Gazette and New South Wales Advertiser for Thursday, the 9th of September, 1841. The United Kingdom from Liverpool, 25th of May, arrived on Tuesday last with 482 Bounty immigrants under the superintendence of two surgeons, Mrs. Boot and Tracy. About 2 weeks after leaving Liverpool, the measles broke out among the children on board. 38 infants died from it and other diseases, but all the adults were fortunate enough to escape it. There are some cases of sickness on board at present, but none of them are of an infectious nature. The ship is the largest merchant vessel that has ever entered the harbour of Port Jackson, being upwards of 1,200 tonnes register. She is North American built and was originally intended for a steamer. Her cleanly appearance between decks evinced the interest Captain Eshelby took in the health of the large number of immigrants placed under his charge. He has been out to this colony once before, and no doubt the surgeons owe the healthy state in which the ship has arrived in a great measure to his experience. It goes on with a few other ships here, which is all very interesting, but 38 infant deaths can be thought of as not a bad voyage in 1841. The Boot family got involved in newspapers, and a certain William Boot had a newspaper up in Cobargo and later had one here in Bega that was later sold out, taken over by the Bega District News. So they were savvy people. This is from the Cobargo Chronicle, February the 15th of September, 1899. The late Dr. Boot. On Monday, the 4th instant, Dr. Edward Boot died at his residence, Yarragee, near Maruya, in his 86th year. And as he was probably the oldest practitioner in the colony, and moreover was a South Coast resident for over 58 years, and well known to many Cobargo and Bega residents, a short sketch of his career may prove of interest. He was born at Gaunt Castle, Lincolnshire, England, on the 28th of April, 1814, and studied his profession in Dublin under Sir Philip Crampton, Doctors Graves, Stokes, Stratton, McCartney and Montgomery, men who, in their day, were in the very first flight of the medical profession. The names of Graves and Stokes will still hold a high place in medical and surgical literature, Graves' anatomy. He was admitted a member of the Royal College of Surgeons in 1835, and after practising about 4 years in England, he came to New South Wales as surgeon to the ship United Kingdom, it says with 514 emigrants, maybe that's counting the children. About a month after his arrival, he came to Maruya, where he resided until the day of his death, a period of 58 years. The deceased came from a family of surgeons. His father, Dr. Henry Boot, was for 45 years surgeon to the Lincoln County Hospital, and his brother, John Hopkins Boot, MD, practised at Blayford, Lincolnshire, for upwards of 40 years. The late doctor necessarily did some rough pioneer work as a medical practitioner, and it was no uncommon thing for him to walk long distances to see patients. The first available horse, an inveterate jib, he purchased for £50. Needless to say, there were no roads so far back as the 40s. But the pioneer doctor was most athletic, and long distances and swollen rivers proved slight obstacles to him. Blacks acted as guides through the trackless bush. On the first occasion he was called upon to give evidence at Darlinghurst, he had to pick his way through the bush from his hotel in Sydney. He was 62 years in active practice, and up to the hour of his death had his faculties unimpaired, and converse freely with his medical attendant on matters in connection with their profession. The deceased never grew feeble, and when his fatal illness overtook him, he was comparatively strong, his wonderful constitution withstanding the inevitable for a long time. He was singularly temperate in all things, a fact which no doubt contributed to his wonderful vitality. Among the many messages of condolences received by the relatives of the deceased was one from Mr. and Mrs. Thomas Tarlington, Fairview, and Mr. and Mrs. D. Tarlington, Bredbatura, respectively. One of the fullest biographies in Bailey, and the only one to rate an illustration, is that of Montague Frederick Evershed, M.D., 1841 to 1927. And you'll see that it's a very similar tale being told here about early doctors. The most noble character in Bega's history was the self-denying, self-forgetting and great-hearted Dr. Evershed. Montague Frederick Evershed, born on the 20th of March 1841 at Billingshurst in Sussex, England, and served 5 years as apprentice to a doctor in Arundel, Sussex. He then practised 3 years at Guy's Hospital, London, and graduated at London University. After practising 5 years in Bedfordshire, he served for 2 years as ship's surgeon on HMS Sabroan. When that vessel visited Sydney in 1873, Evershed heard of the need of doctors in various county towns in the colony, and after visiting them, decided to establish his practice in Bega. Accordingly, he sailed to Merimbula, the port of Bega at the time, and was driven up by Rickson in his horse coach. We've just had visitors of Rickson descendants, which is rather fine today. We've heard about Rickson's coach coming up with Brain in 1866 as well, 7.5 hours from Merimbula to Bega via Bornder Beach. Rickson's family hotel, where we are today, on the corner of Auckland and Bega Streets, and the cottage next public school in Auckland Street were his first residences. And his district extended from Tilba to the Victorian border and to Bombala and Brown Mountain, an area larger than the county of Auckland. Rough and mountainous bush tracks provided the only communication in the district, and Dr. Evershed made his journeys on horseback. The only bridge in the district was Russell's at Gilla, and by day and night, in rain, wind and frost, the doctor made his journeys to his patients' bedsides in the outlying shingle-roofed slab huts of the settlements. In flood time, rivers and creeks had to be swum. At the time of his arrival, pleuro had decimated the cattle and rust the wheat. Adverse times confronted the settlers. Telephonic communication was non-existent, and the only way to secure the doctor's services was to ride into town with a message. J.J. Green of Bemboka related how he would ride to Bega for the doctor in 2 hours, but the doctor, not being an expert rider, would take 4 hours to reach Bemboka. The whole day would be gone before the doctor reached Bega again. Sometimes he had to remain all night. And although the customary fee for these visits was £4, the doctor never troubled if he did not receive it from poorer families. It is recorded that on returning from a 50-mile ride to attend a sick family, he once said, "I can't charge these people. They seem poor." To him, no journey was too long to relieve suffering and pain. He would drive to Tantawanglo, include a change of horses at Kamaruka, and collect nothing for it. As time went on, he married Miss Welby, a Bega lady, daughter of the schoolmaster, and resided in the weatherboard cottage on the southwest corner of Parker and Upper Streets, which is still there, and later in the cottage at the top of Gibbs Street, opposite Belmore Street, which is still there. In 1890, he built a fine brick residence for himself in Parker Street, where he practised for the rest of his life. He was a lover of cricket and was patron of the Bega Club. With the gradual improvement in road conditions, Dr. Evershed used a buggy for his journeys, and in 1914 again changed to motor car, investing in a Ford. His love of his fellows was reflected in his faithful service as a trustee and church warden at St. John's, across the road from us here today, where every Sunday morning found him in his pew beside his devoted wife, who was also a keen church worker and who for 43 years was leader and organiser of St. John's Sewing Bee. Unlike many of the prominent figures who have lived in the district, he did not accumulate a very valuable estate. In fact, the desire to do so did not come into his mind, for he was most concerned with service to his fellows. For 50 years, he was medical officer of the Loyal Prince Alfred and Evening Star Lodges. He never sought limelight, being rather reserved. Whenever there was any public speaking to be done, his good friend, H.M. Bloomfield, did it for him. So great was his love for his work that when, in his declining years, he ceased going out, other local doctors offered to buy his practice. He would not sell. Until his death, its value had greatly decreased. After his death at Bega on June 16, 1927, at the age of 86, the citizens of the district voluntarily subscribed £450 for a memorial to perpetuate his memory. This, the first and only public memorial to any single person in the district, dedicated in the presence of 2,000 people in May 1930, takes the form of a clock tower at the foot of Gipps Street in Carve Street, serving the people as the worthy doctor loved to do, and turns the thought of all who passed by to the noble character who, as his inscription says, all through his long and honourable life, serves suffering humanity without thought of fee or reward. And I'm standing here right now looking at the internal workings of the Evershed clock. There was some talk last year of moving the clock. People in Bega and surrounding districts voted 90% to keep it where it was, but the other demand was, and let's have it going again so that it actually does serve the people. I was telling people, if you're late for work, blame the clock. There it is, it's working now, it's looking really fine. Have a look at it if you ever come to Bega, and I hope it never gets moved.
Graham Farram has been a member of this Bega Valley community for some 40-odd years now, and for a lot of that, has had a real interest in the history of the region. We catch up with Graham at 11 o'clock every Monday morning in the foyer of the Bega Pioneers Museum to record these recitals. And you, of course, are more than welcome to join us there if you'd like to. You're listening to The Local Update, a podcast looking at local issues, events and personalities from around the Bega Valley. You'll find all the info you need about who I am and what the podcast's about at indiemedia.com.au. You'll find previous episodes there as well, of course. indiemedia.com.au. A new episode is published every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. here on the website. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your favourite podcasts. Indie Media wishes to recognise the Yuin people as the traditional owners of the land from which we broadcast and pay respects to elders, past, present and emerging. Thanks again to Graham Farram for all his work in this week's episode and all the previous episodes as well, of course. As I said before, you can find all the details on previous episodes at indiemedia.com.au. On next week's episode, we'll catch up with David from the Bega Repair Cafe to find out what they're all about. And another treasure from Graham Farram again, of course, as well. Thank you again for your company. My name's Indy Wood. We'll catch you again next week. Bye now.